Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. We're going to talk about something that I hopefully think we will all find interesting because most of us find our household pets interesting. We're talking today from folks at Woods Humane Society, but I want to give you my typical fill-in-the-blanks information that I like to remind you of this morning, and that is that our job here is really to look at credible and valid insights and information in our community and help us build a better community and understand things better. This is Central Coast Voices. We want you to be part of that voice too. The phone number here is 805-781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. And we are going to talk up today about a wonderful organization that's been around since 1955. Can't think back that far. Sorry about that. And that's Woods Humane Society. Their job here is really to serve and protect and shelter homeless companion animals and find them homes, place those animals in humane environment, both in the shelter and in places they go after that, and really promote responsible pet ownership. And this is really the discussion we want to have today. This is a facility that really over the years has been involved in and instrumental in spaying and neutering over 40,000 animals and also finding homes for a tremendous amount of them over time. My guests today are Steve Kragenbrink, and he is Director of Marketing and Community Programs for Woods Humane Society, and Dr. Leslie Scalina, who is the Director of Veterinary Services there. And I can tell you that even though this may be a topic that you find boring unless your dog is, or cat is listening, we will have a good time today because we can aggravate these people with questions that they probably have had to answer a million times before, but not on the radio. So we want you to be part of that discussion today, too. It's a wonderful organization, and I want to probably get to one of the key questions that we get often when we talk about woods or we talk about animal household pets around here, and that is there's probably a presumption for a lot of people that Woods Humane Society and San Luis Obispo County Animal Control are somehow the same organization, and that's not the case. But I've when talking about this program before we went on the air, and when I was looking at putting my notes together, it seemed to be a recurring theme about people feeling like that was the case. So, Steve, I'm going to not make the doctor answer political questions, so I'll give it to you first.
I get all the hard balls. Yeah, so, you know, Woods Humane Society and San Luis Obispo County Animal Services, we have been working in tandem step for step for as long as I can remember. I've been with Woods now 13 years, and I know that the relationship that we've shared and we continue to share and that we've had between our two organizations, it spans decades going back, you know, even I would say before we were located at our old facility, which some folks might remember, which was located at the end of the runway out off of Broad and Buckley in San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, I believe it's now a fire station.
It is. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So Woods and Animal Services, we work together, and our goals are to reduce euthanasia throughout our county, to increase adoptions, to increase spay and neuter, and to really do everything we can to combine resources but not duplicate resources and duplicate efforts, meaning, yes, we both focus on animal adoptions, but they serve a role in the community for enforcement of animal-related codes and laws and things. And of course, surrendering animals, confiscating animals, and more on that law enforcement side. But interestingly enough, throughout the nation, a lot of shelters will, they'll get together with their municipal counterparts, and they combine and they form what typically is called like an SPCA. For us here in San Luis Obispo County, though, we have remained separate for there's numerous reasons. And throughout the years, there's been conversations about combining and not combining, but really I feel like our model is extremely effective and it's working, and it's worked for thousands and thousands and thousands of animals in our community and, our residents too, as they're dealing with, animal-related challenges or issues, or you know, just again those adoptions that they're having. But it's a really effective model that we have, and we're very good friends with everybody over at Animal Services. They're our colleagues. We are literally share a parking lot nearly, so we're right next door. So it makes it very efficient for transporting animals. But speaking of transporting animals, what we do is we do transport a large number of animals out of our county shelter over into Woods Humane Society every single year, and these are animals that, you know, maybe they've been surrendered, maybe they were picked up as strays, but they are displaced San Luis Obispo County animals. And then we also are providing our spay and neuter services for the county as well, so that we can ensure that animals that are adopted out of the county shelter aren't leaving with the ability to make more animals. So there's a lot of great partnerships and a lot of great programs that we do share, and I know the doc can talk a little bit more about that. But.
Okay, so to sort things out a little bit, if I have a dog that I, for some reason, can't keep anymore. That's usually as I said that, it occurred to me the inverse is usually the case of my dogs deciding they can't keep me anymore. So I can surrender that dog. Is there a difference with and or are there circumstances under which the county animal control would take that dog and Woods would not, or vice versa?
If you're the owner of the animal, you could surrender your dog or your cat to either Woods or Animal Services. Woods only has dogs and cats, so if you're having to surrender your bearded dragon or your guinea pig, that would definitely go over to Animal Services. Animal Services is also where, if you find a stray, they would be going to Animal Services as well. Woods Humane Society does not take in stray animals. They have to be owned animals.
Okay, so in my mind... Well, I have to preface this with the fact that in my adult life, I've probably owned 6 or 7 dogs. And of those, only one of them was not a rescue animal. So I've been through the process of rescuing from an individual, rescuing from an environment like Woods. And for a lot of people, that's the only place that they've ever had a pet from. So... I'm surprised at the number of people who don't realize that that's really the best and frankly the most cost-effective way to come up with a pet to have in your life. What you were saying before, if I need a pet turtle, I need to find it someplace else. but that's a factor. But it's what Woods does for most of us seems like, because I haven't adopted, I think at this point, the most recently I adopted a dog was 12 years ago. That dog is still with me. And so I haven't had a whole lot of interaction with the organization. So I'm wondering how you educate the public that may only interact with you once. And may have never interacted with you again, because even though people have heard about you, your visibility is not high. Your location is not on a visible route for the public on a regular basis. However, that will improve, I guess, because you're also building a new program shelter in North County, and we'll get into that. But so does the average person, the average person who rings you up on the phone or walks in the door of Woods, what are they assuming they're there for? If they've never been there before, it's like, hello, how are you? And I would like to find out whether or not you've got a really nice German Shepherd that's not more than 5 years old, and I'd like to have them.
That's pretty much every conversation that walks in. I think you're right. You know, we are a destination point because we are located off of Highway 1 in Kansas. Fortunately, because of our physical location, too, with our colleagues at Animal Services, we're kind of a one-stop shop as far as when people are looking to adopt. I think one of the benefits that we have from that, though, is that with that little 5-minute buffer from, city center downtown, when people are driving out, for the most part, I feel like they've already made up their mind that they want to adopt an animal. That's, I would say, is our number one touch point we have with the community. And, as you're saying, it might be a 12-year-old touch point, but hey, we touched you 12 years ago. we do get a lot of those repeat adopters. They'll come out and they'll, we get a lot of folks that are coming out and adopting that way. A lot of folks are seeing us on social media and, are on the internet keeping track of you know, who's made available, and as they're being made available, you know, they can always check adopt a pet. It's really dependent on the type of breeds people are interested in. And of course, we see kind of those generic San Luis Obispo County breeds, a lot of those coming through animal services or from owner surrenders, which, you know, typically here, medium-sized dogs to the bigger boys, and, you know, a lot of the shepherds and the border collies, a lot of chihuahuas. But another great component we have is our transport program, where we're able to go out and assist shelters that might be heavily impacted. I know we go out to the Central Valley pretty frequently with our transport van, and we're able to move, what would you say, Doc, like 30 animals, 35 animals or something like that?
Up to that. An average transport's about 20. Yeah. Sometimes in times of natural disasters, for example, during the fires, hurricanes down in the south, we would bring in animals up to 30 or 40 sometimes.
Speaking of the animals from the south, you know, we got those, yeah. they came by airplane, which was kind of neat. But talking about the breeds, we were seeing a lot more of the hounds and just different types of dogs.
Which are my favorite.
Well, they have a drawl. They bark with a drawl. So, yeah. But what I'm getting at is that when somebody's looking for an animal, they have the ability to go to our website, and it's through on Adopt a Pet as well, but then go to our website, and you can kind of see this variety of animals. And as soon as they're made available, as soon as the doc clears them, you know, they're basically ready to go. We'll get those pictures up online, and people will sit there, and they'll kind of cruise and kind of peruse.
Okay, I want to back up a little bit. So the transports, you talked about what would seem to be two different transport situations. One is where a shelter in an area where there's a disaster, like Montecito or up in the Santa Rosa area, may be looking for extra space that they don't have, and that may be on a case-by-case basis. Are you also looking are there areas where there are more people turning in animals than are getting adopted? And if you're looking at a situation where, gee, all of a sudden you're out of inventory, and the word inventory is kind of tacky, I'm sorry, but I can't think of a better way to describe it. You don't have enough pets here for people to adopt. So, oh, gee whiz, a shelter program in Fresno's got too many dogs this month, and we don't have enough, so we're going to barter for some dogs.
I can actually comment on that. So there is a small town in the Central Valley that I was actually invited to visit with our transport team. I don't know if you've all heard of Avenal, but I had not heard of Avenal until I moved up here to San Luis Obispo. And what was really impactful for me when I made that visit to that shelter, which is the shelter there will service the city of Avenal and also Corcoran. They have, I believe, one animal control officer. The shelter manager there said that I was the first veterinarian or medical professional to step foot in that shelter. And so
That's shocking.
It is shocking. But it actually, when I really think about it, it's not that surprising. There are very limited resources in that area for the animals. So we actually have a pretty good partnership with that shelter to visit on a regular basis and to exit animals from that shelter, because they do literally less than 10 adoptions a year. No, that shelter does not get any foot traffic. So the best thing that we can do to help is to go and take animals that are off their straight hold, dogs and cats, and bring them to our shelter here at Woods for adoption, because that is what the need is there. So that's one of our most productive partnerships.
So they see a very high number of strays.
Correct.
And not much interest in having them adopted.
Correct. Yeah.
This may sound like a sarcastic question. I don't mean it. Where did those dogs come from in the first place?
The streets.
Their mom and dad's.
The streets of Avenal. Yeah. So from what was explained to me by the shelter director there,
Steve, we're
the
not going to ask
manager.
You any medical questions. Okay. medical questions don't get asked of you. Okay.
I've got it from here, Steve.
Yeah, thanks.
Larger breed dogs will get reclaimed because people will want to, they'll want to go pick up their shepherd that's been, you know, protecting the property, mm-hmm. but they won't necessarily go back for the small dog that got out because they may think that maybe a coyote got him or hit by a car. So there's just, it's a bit breed specific for what the animals that we do bring in from Avenal. It's usually smaller dogs that just don't get reclaimed. But, you know, one of the pressing points for me when I hear that is that these larger dogs are getting reclaimed, the small ones aren't, is that those dogs are getting reclaimed unaltered. So that shelter, that area, does not have any real accessible services for spay and neuter. So that's something that's in the back of my mind, but it is a really important topic for us at Woods, is expanding our spay neuter services for the community here.
My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if any animal that is adopted out of Woods here is spayed, or if it didn't come to you spayed or neutered, it gets
correct.
Spayed or neutered before it's allowed to be adopted.
And that is a California law. Every dog or cat adopted from a shelter must be altered prior to adoption. There are rare cases where, let's say, an animal is too sick for surgery. It can be adopted out on a contractual basis that it will be altered at, you know, soon after adoption or come back to the shelter for that spay or neuter. But it is actually a legal requirement that dogs and cats are altered before adoption.
But there's a let me make sure I'm clear. But there is a shelter program that's run by a government agency near Avenal that basically allows animals to be adopted out of there that aren't spayed or neutered.
So they may have an agreement that the adopter will get a certificate of or a voucher to take that animal to a local veterinarian to have a spay or neuter done. So it may be done after the fact. There may be a voucher type program, but the understanding is that the animal will be altered either prior to adoption. Now, a shelter that doesn't have a veterinarian on staff or a surgical facility, you know, which there are many shelters that do not have those facilities. And so therefore, veterinarians in the community or other services may be accessed in order to make sure that that's done.
Yeah. If
For example, just to backtrack, so, you know, at Woods Humane Society, we do all of the alteration surgeries, the spays or neuters, for Slo County. So the Animal Services Division does not have a surgical facility on site, nor do they have veterinarians to perform surgery. They don't have a medical team. So that's why all of the animals from county come over to Woods for their spay and neuter surgery before being put up for adoption. You see how there's that partnership?
You just lie to them. You tell them they're going to camp.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. I shouldn't have gone.
We tell them they're going to get tutored, which is a totally different thing. Yes, I understand. Yeah.
Sorry. We're talking with folks today from Woods Humane Society, and this is it's a serious topic, but it's hard to make it serious sometimes when most of what we're talking about is animals that we like to have around. I don't know anybody that adopts an animal because they feel like they're somehow only going to rescue a dog or a cat that's going to annoy them, even though there are those out there that are annoying. We'll talk about cats in a little while. Anyway, you can give us a call and be part of this discussion if you have some observations or maybe your experience dealing with Woods Humane Society. The phone number is 805-781-3875. I guess I need to put this in because if I don't put this in, I'm going to get calls and emails later on. It's not that we're not talking about cats. It's that I have to rely on my guests to talk about cats because the only thing I know about cats is that they cause my nose to run. So I have never been around cats, even though I'm sure a good portion of what you're dealing with are people who have cats as opposed to dogs. My hunch is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that more people who have cats are less likely to turn them into a shelter because cats are more of an indoor animal under most circumstances. So I see cats as lower maintenance than dogs. You know, for me, dogs are the 7-year-old boy who decides to destroy the house when you're not looking. Cats just look at you like you're crazy and go off in a corner by themselves and say, I can't believe I'm doing this. But I'm sorry. Oh, I'm going to get mail about this one. I'm sorry.
I think when we're talking about felines in our community, you know, the number one issue that we run into is volume and the sheer volume that we have of cats. Fortunately, through the efforts that we've made with spay and neuter and our partnerships, I feel like we've been able to make a huge impact in that number of volume of cats that are entering into our county shelter, that are coming into Woods. Right now, we're sitting at the top of the wave of kitten season. We've already started to see some of those little babies showing up and pregnant moms. And you know, what's going to happen is we just get inundated with all these kittens. So I know that Dr. Scalina and her team are just, you know, getting ready and kind of waiting in the wings to – charge forward with increased spay and neuter efforts as we're working with our local community partners, not just Animal Services, but the Feline Network, for example, Paws Cause, and every group in between, you know, South County and North County. We do have a brand new spay and neuter clinic that we opened up in November up in Atascadero, and it's been firing on all cylinders since. But really, I think, you know, when we're talking about cats, the other issue that we run into that I've seen, and this is definitely going to be more just an opinion, but industry-wide, I feel that people are more likely going to go to that, you know, animal services type of facility to reclaim their dog. They're more or less likely to do it for their cat. So I think sometimes what happens is when that cat wanders off, or, you know, people kind of start thinking, oh, well, cat got eaten, as you were mentioning, by like a coyote, or, you know, it's something happened to the cat, versus, oh, we should go check the animal shelter to see if, you know, Fluffy's there. Definitely the personality of a cat kind of might be working against them a little bit too. You know, that little bit of nonchalantness or catitude, as some people call it.
I don't know why you're so hard on cats.
I love cats. I do. I love cats. I am a cat person. I'm a cat guy. I think that, you know, there's a lot of these different components that go into it. But for us in the sheltering industry, it's definitely the volume that we – that's the biggest struggle we have is volume.
Well, one of my I live on 2 acres in Atascadero. I have a dog. Unfortunately, I had two dogs 2 weeks ago. One of them we had to put to sleep, old age.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
The dog lived to be 16 and was just done with us, I think. But anyway, but she was around for a long time. So I have one dog now, and it's just hard to just say I have a dog. Yeah. Anyway,
we can help with that.
On 2 acres. Mm-hmm. And one of my neighbors has a dog that comes and runs over on my property sometime, and there's a long, long reason for that, and it's okay. But dogs tend to be, in my opinion, conspicuous. And the reason why I say that is because there's also a cat that lives on my property that I have never met. Mm. I have no idea where it came from. It is not catchable. It just kind of drifts through about once in a while.
We can catch him.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. Anyway, well,
we're going to bring him back.
Step into my office. Yeah. Tell me more about this cat you can't catch.
You see your ears perked up?
I have a
phone number you can call.
I perceive, and a lot of people perceive, cats as a more feral animal than a dog. Feral dogs are very conspicuous because they tend to be aggressive, annoying, and loud. Feral cats tend to be under the radar a lot, unless they eat your dog foods, your dog's dog food, and then that's a separate issue altogether. But that's my hunch, and I don't know if that becomes a big factor also, that cats seem to be less conspicuous in the open spaces than dogs are.
Well, I could talk all day about...
Well, good. We have an hour.
Community cats.
We just got her started.
So with the opening of our new spay neuter clinic up in Atascadero, we have helped... I can't even give you a number off the top of my head, a lot of community cats. So actually at our opening in November, I had several people come up to me. I've only been with Woods for 2 years. I had several people come up to me at our opening and say, thank you so much for opening this clinic. We have a community cat population issue up here, and we need a place to bring these cats for spay neuter, so that we can control the population of these cats, which we now refer to as community cats. Not necessarily feral, although there are feral cats.
So that's the politically correct way of saying feral cats.
Well, community, because we want people to understand that these cats are part of essentially our ecosystem. They're out there, you know, and they may be...
I believe the gopher population on my property is down because of this cat that I won't let you come catch.
So it's a working cat. Okay, even better.
Yes, okay.
So the cat has a job, right? Even better.
But he doesn't ask for a raise.
I don't expect him to. But, you know, these cats live in colonies, as you've probably... And this cat probably is with a colony. Okay. You just don't see the rest of them.
I want to... I don't want this to go away, but I realize we've left Larry on hold for a long time here. So hold on a second. Larry, thank you very much. You're on the air now, and I apologize for keeping you waiting. Are you there? Okay, hold on a second. We need to probably turn off your radio. Okay, we'll get back. We'll get back to Larry. Hold on a second. I'm gonna put him on hold. Okay. Anyway.
So we have served a lot of rescue groups, private people who have multiple cats maybe living on their property, mm-hmm. Atascadero, Paso, Templeton, all those areas. And these people who may not technically, you know, they don't own the cat. They didn't adopt the cat. They didn't purchase the cat. It's not their cat. But this cat or this group of cats have sort of, they live on the property.
A gang of cats. Okay.
They all snap when they walk.
They wear berets. No. We're getting okay. Lost in the weeds here.
Hold on. Okay. Let's go. I'm going to let Larry save us from this for a second. Okay. Hold on a second. Larry, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. Thank you very much for your patience. Yeah. Sorry. If you're a cat person, I'm sorry if I abused you here.
It's okay. It will all come back to you in karma. Okay. Up until about a year and a half ago, I had spent 25 years pretty much full-time volunteering next door to Woods at the Dog Pound, starting in 93 when I used to start my day there by walking in the back and seeing which dogs had been euthanized that morning. So things have come a long, long way. But with regards to why the animals end up at animal shelters, among other things, our society is so baby-oriented. Every day somebody comes in and they ask, do you have any puppies? I'll say, well, what kind of dog do you want? And they'll look stunned for a moment and sputter, we just wanted a puppy. If you go to any animal shelter, the vast majority, meaning over half of the dogs, are going to be somewhere around a year old. People want the puppy, puppy cute, puppy baby, and that's where their thinking stops. They're not thinking, okay, this is the next thing to actually having a kid. This is a being that is going to be completely dependent on you for potentially 18 years, and people just don't think. Sometimes a young couple would come in, and she would be pregnant. He would be holding about a two-year-old in his arm and holding the hand of somebody about four. And I know they're going to say, do you have any puppies? Because they can't wait for the next baby to be born. So those are some thoughts as to why it's so overcrowded. The other big thing in the last dozen years or so, it used to be pretty rare to see some kind of pit bull around here. I always used to notice just how, you know, absolutely muscled up they were. Then about 12 years ago, whether it was hip hop or I don't know what's going on, but everybody started having to make more pit bulls. And there were times at the end of the day, I would walk up and down the aisles, notepad in hand, three columns, pit bull, chihuahua, other. And it'd be like 25 pits, 20 chihuahuas, eight or nine other. So that's got a whole lot to do with overcrowding. It was my idea that we should have spay-neuter optional for the pit bulls, either you or your dog. Those were the options as to who's going to get neutered.
Artie, yeah, I think we need to leave it at that at this point, Larry. So thank you very much.
We'll do that.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Interesting perception on this process.
Well, you know, something that he was saying, though, it does ring true in that we do typically see a lot of those year-and-a-half, two-year-old dogs. I mean, let's take a Border Collie, for example. Really cute little puppies. Border Collies make amazingly cute little puppies, but, you know, they're a Border Collie. It's going to be a high-energy dog that's going to need a lot of activity. So we do see more of those.
And they're smarter than me. So
smarter than, most of us. Yeah. but we do see typically, you know, a lot of those you know, adolescent dogs coming through, possibly because people got them as a puppy and then didn't realize what, you know, time, effort, and energy it's going to take to, you know, provide that animal with an enriching environment and a positive way for that animal to get its energy out. But I also feel like, you know, Woods Humane Society does a really great job of adoption counseling. And what I'm mean by that is that not only do folks need to take a little bit of time before they come out to a shelter and do a little breed research, you know, find kind of what breeds you're looking for, you know, with typical breed characteristics. It's never 100% guarantee, but, you know, find what's going to be appropriate for your situation. So if you do have young children and a baby on the way, trust me, you're going to want the old dog that just wants to lay around, you know, and maybe go for a walk around the block versus the dog that's going to need your you know, attention all the time because you have the children. Not saying don't get a puppy, because potentially your family has the ability to give it the best home ever. But
well, I'll give you, you brought up an interesting segment of the population that, that pleasantly surprises me, because my thought is a new puppy is far more work than a year and a half old dog.
Correct.
Is. And a year and a half old dog is still young enough, even though it's a lot bigger than a puppy, still has some of that puppy mentality. So I would think, gee, if I could walk in and get a year and a half or 2 year old dog, hopefully that hasn't been living on a ranch, so at least it's house trained, because my dog lives in the house, even though I've got 2 acres, that would be a very good and easily adoptable population of animals.
I just wanted to make a comment on just how we just really present ourselves to the public as far as how we want to be the place where people come to get pets. If you adopt an animal from us and it doesn't work out for whatever reason, we want people to know that they can bring the animal back and there's no judgment. We all understand that, you know, people's living situations are unique, their schedules are unique, their initial idea of what an animal is going to be like may be different in the home. You know, an animal's behavior in the shelter can be very different than in the home, better or worse, either way. And so we just want to make sure that people understand that we have all different ages and sizes and shapes and temperaments of cats and dogs. And if you adopt an animal from us that is not working for you and your family, that we want to be the resource for you to reach out to help make sure that we can find something that does work for you.
Well, that brings up another part of this that I think is very good, and I'm glad that you mentioned this, because that may put a lot of people in a position of, I'm not sure if I've never had a dog before.
Right.
I'm not sure if I can manage a dog. I don't know if the dog is going to want to. I'm on the road a lot and I want to take the dog with me in the car and I want to make sure I have a dog that travels well.
Right.
For someone who's not had a pet like that before, their big concern may be, okay, I'm adopting this part of my family, and I can't say, never mind, you can have them back.
Right.
So I think that's a very good point to emphasize, though.
Yes. We encourage people we give them points, we give them tips, we encourage people to do research on breed-specific, you know, dogs with breed-specific behaviors, that kind of thing. But you don't know unless you try, and we don't want to discourage people.
I always like to say that, you know, yes, we focus a lot of our effort on that adoption and trying to, you know, promote the animals, get the animals out in the community. But behind the scenes, we have a professional group of staff that, you know, we do follow-up phone calls. We're always checking in. If somebody's having a behavior issue with their animal, they can call up and, you know, potentially work with our behavior department. If they have medical questions, potentially they could come up and call up, you know, our medical department. Of course, we're always recommending and asking that you have your own veterinarian, of course. But we're looking to establish a relationship with that adopter. It's not like, you know, you touched the dog last. You know, we're not worried about it anymore. We want to know. And we love it when folks come back at, you know, a year later and we see the pictures of this dog. I mean, we had this one dog and it just, I use him as my kind of poster dog right now, Cappy. And Cappy was this dog that was just so hyperactive in his kennel, to the point where, you know, a lot of staff and volunteers, they couldn't handle him, couldn't manage him. And he was miserable. And this dog was just sitting and sitting and sitting. Finally, there was this couple that came out and they're triathletes, very active people. They got this dog, and you know, now they're supplying this dog with so many positive ways to get his energy out. It's like the happiest match made in heaven you could ever imagine, and this dog is so happy. And they send these pictures back. I mean, the dog has its own Instagram, so we all follow him. Happy Cappy Slow, by the way. But I mean, seeing this dog that was so miserable in a shelter environment to now just with the pure look of exhaustion on his face because he's so happy and he's so comfortable. I mean, that's what it's about. It's about creating those positive matches. And as the doctor was saying, sometimes it's not always going to work. And if it doesn't work, you call us up, you talk to us, you bring the animal back.
Well, that brings another part to this, too, because this was a dog that you got to know because he was probably living in the shelter longer than you would like a dog to be in the shelter. If I've never had a dog before or I haven't had a dog for years, for whatever reason, what can I do? Is this an environment where if I come out to the shelter and I do the paperwork and the dog goes home with me in 2 hours and that's the end of the discussion? Or how do I test the environment as to whether or not I'm prepared to own a dog? I'm prepared to consider taking one home and keeping it, even though you tell me if this doesn't work out, we'll take the dog back. For a lot of people, and I may be one of them, it's like, no, your job is to find a nice home for this dog, and I'm sorry.
I've been trying to get rid of her. She keeps coming back.
Okay, I'm leaving this. Steve, you're dismissed. Okay, anyway. Sorry about that. That was not meant for you at all. It's just language. Anyway.
Fine.
Anyway, but I may be afraid of adopting this dog because I don't know enough about owning a pet to do that. I mean, not everybody had dogs as kids. There were more dogs in my house when I was above about 17 or 18 years old because my parents decided that I was old enough not to be a bigger problem than the dog was, so then I could have one. That wasn't meant sarcastically. That's really kind of how it worked out, and it's been great ever since. But for some people who may have not had a dog, I'm sure you come up with, you know, there's a 50-year-old out there that's decided they want a companion dog or cat that's never had one, and they don't have the first idea about how to do this. So what kind of, coaching process do you have?
I actually think that those are my favorite types of adopters because anybody that has a dog will attest to this. You know, they truly become your best friend. And when you have the ability to give somebody the opportunity to kind of open that world of pet ownership. It's just such a fantastic feeling. And we have had people come out and, you know, they'll come up to our adoption counselors and let them know, like, I've never had a dog before. Well, we have a retail area. This is, you know, your leashes and your toys. And But again, for us, it's about creating an animal welfare community. And it's not about just sending that animal out. So we do want to have that appropriate animal go to that appropriate home. Maybe that person, our adoption counselors and our animal care staff would definitely, you know, guide a little more through the process as far as recommending dogs that might be a little less on the maintenance side, dogs that might be a little easier or a little more outgoing as far as you're not needing to manage behavior issues as much, or maybe the dog already has a lot of its training. But I think when we can take that person and we can then get them set up in our obedience classes, for example. So we go through that adoption process and they come back in a couple of weeks after our follow-up phone calls. We check in. Things are going great. Of course, our staff that are having those communications with these adopters, they can always make their recommendations on you know, what they need or what they, you know, they can answer those questions basically. And then, you know, as the dog maybe gets a little older or that relationship, that bond grows even stronger, you start getting into some obedience work. And all of a sudden you have this person who's never had a dog before and now they're just walking around with the, I call them the leash trophy, you know, for the dog, because the dog has been able to share and instruct them on what it means to love unconditionally. And I think that when you see that bond happen between a person and an animal, I mean, that's what we're about. And fortunately for us at Woods, I feel a little guilty about this sometimes, but you know, the doc and I, we have front row seats to seeing this happen. We see that spark happen when somebody comes out and falls in love. Mm-hmm. We see that, for me, being involved with the shelter for so long, seeing those dogs that I know or I knew when they were puppies, and now I see them come in and the dog's grayed, you know, he's got the gray whiskers. And it's just that you see that relationship and being able to be a part of it. And being able to touch so many lives and impact so many lives, not just in animals, but in people, in the community. When I think about our humane education program, all the youth and the children that, you know, we're able to instruct on how to be safe around animals or how to have empathy for animals, and not just dogs and cats, but, you know, branching it out to our ecology and animals that the youth of our community are going to come into contact with.
Yeah, you build a two-way love-respect relationship that I think people who have not had household pets before don't realize. I want to remind people again, the phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. We're dealing with folks today from Woods Humane Society. It's probably been a little more lighthearted than a lot of our programs have been, and I thank you for that, because pets in your life should be a positive experience and not a negative experience. We got to get back to cats though a little bit, because otherwise I'm going to get terrible email and phone calls, and I haven't talked enough about cats. We were talking about feral animals versus, or perceived feral animals versus non-feral animals. And in my unprofessional view was that that feral cats oftentimes become less conspicuous in our world.
Well, it's a actual fact that more cats are pets than dogs in the U.S. So more people have cats than they have dogs. So just in general, so there's a lot of cat lovers out there.
Okay.
as far as community cats go, or feral cats, you know, these are the cats that live in our communities outside. They may not have an actual quote unquote owner, but they are a part of our community. And part of helping to keep lots of animals healthy is by spaying or neutering and rabies vaccinating these cats. So cats are actually at a higher risk for rabies than dogs are. These outdoor cats are at a higher risk for rabies than dogs. And so that, from a public health perspective, is another reason why we should be involved with managing these feral cat or community cat populations.
They at higher risk because they're more likely
outside.
To get... Because
right.
It's outside.
Yeah.
Right, they may also be more likely to be in a scrappy environment with a small animal that's
so
rabid.
In this neck of the woods... I mean, rabies is not a huge issue in this country because of our very robust vaccine laws, and we're very good about doing that. You know, for dogs, the licensing is linked to that rabies vaccine, but it's not so for cats. But cats living outside, they're going to be more likely to be in contact with a bat or a skunk or that species of animal that actually spreads rabies. So that's why it's actually very important to... anytime we have a feral cat or community cat brought into our clinic for spay neuter, that is typically coming in a trap. So again, back to your cat that you can't catch, I bet you we can catch him.
I don't have any incentive to catch him. I'm sorry.
I do.
Yeah, you do. Okay.
I do. I'm going to be visiting
you. Yeah, go look up my address. Okay, we'll talk about
But so this is one population of animal that we really focus on at our spay neuter clinic in Atascadero, and we have a very well-oiled machine up there, so to speak. People who know how to trap know how to counsel people on how to safely trap these cats. You know, very, very low cost for spay neuter for these cats. It's $25, and some of these residents in Atascadero, for example, can have it subsidized by the city. They actually have supported the residents in Atascadero for this $25
spay neuter.
That also,
and that was good to hear, because what that really may mean for some people is... it may be a difference of them having to turn in their cat to you because they feel like they can't pay it, but it's a responsibility they should have.
Right.
So that somebody gets to keep the cat.
We don't want people surrendering their animal to us because they can't afford a spay or neuter. That breaks my heart. That is why we have
and
this
clinic. But it probably comes up in people's...
Sometimes it may.
You're being real clear about it here, and I really appreciate that. But I think for a lot of people, it may not have occurred to them that was something that they could ask about.
Of course. Sure. Absolutely. I'm sure that people have struggled with that, and that's why we want to be a resource for those people. And especially up in North County, you know, the closest... low-cost spay-neuter clinic for residents in that area is either Santa Maria Humane Society in Santa Barbara County or Monterey County.
So those are 50-plus mile trips to
Correct.
Do that, yeah.
So that's why we built this clinic there, was to have an accessible and affordable option for people who are seeking spay or neuter for their pets.
I want to talk about your expansion into North County in a minute, too, but I also want to make sure that John, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. What are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, my daughter has adopted two dogs over the past 15 years or 14 years, and they were over a year old. They weren't puppies. And they became dogs of renown in the family. I mean, full-on members. And I even have them on my web page, you know, past dogs. And the memories have been wonderful. Those dogs, they seem to pack right up to a... I think they're appreciative. We're on to a new thing here, and they really like it. And I've heard this story from other people as well. And I just wanted to get that across. You know, puppies, they're a problem, and it's not. Well, they're good, and they're great, but there's nothing wrong with older dogs because a lot of times they really end up being great companions.
John, I think you bring up a good point, too, because I've had some adult adoptive dogs. I've also had some that were under two. They're a lot more tolerant of us than we seem to be often of them, which means that if you'll put up with me and my family as a dog, you'll put up with anything. And so I think that we forget sometimes that that cats and dogs in both cases tend to be very adaptive to the environment we put them in, and even a new environment doesn't take them long to figure out, among other things, who the food source is. And if you bring the average dog dinner for about 3 or 4 days, they figure out that they need to keep you around, and that works really well. And I'm not being sarcastic about it. I just think that sometimes people who've not had a household pet don't remember that or understand that.
Yeah, well, they become, their personalities come out, and they just become part of the family. I've had nothing but feral cats that have come into my life. I have one laying in my lap 12 years. It's been my buddy, and it just arrived one day. And, I mean, she's hung in here through tough times for me.
Yeah.
And
there's
a couple more out in the yard. I keep looking. I'm even naming them, but they're feral. And I'm starting to wonder about when, you know,
don't let Dr. Leslie know she's going to come and
she's taking notes.
She's taking notes on who has feral cats.
The phone number for our North County clinic is 464-5034. If you have any questions about how to care for your community cats, please give us a call.
That's also a good thing to know. They're beautiful cats. I just don't want to get them in trouble in Utah.
They may be on parole and you don't even know it, so be careful. Thanks for the call, John.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about you. You're in the process of designing or building a new facility in North County that will, where are we in that process?
Well, that's definitely kicking the can down the road pretty far ahead of ourselves right now. But we actually, so a little bit of history. There used to be North County Humane Society, mm-hmm. and then Woods Humane Society and North County Humane Society merged. And I believe, wasn't it 3 years ago?
That was 2 years.
2 years ago. So we merged and we became one organization, Woods Humane Society, and we started operating that facility located at 2300 Ramona Road in Atascadero. It's off the Del Rio exit and 101. And then through conversations that we were having, we did a needs assessment survey in North County, and just, you know, conversations we were having with animal services and with members in the community, we just started realizing that what we needed to do as an organization was to rise and meet that need of a low-cost spay and neuter for residents in North County and for those community cats and for owned cats, too, and owned dogs, by the way. So we went through that process, and it took us about, a year? We actually went pretty quickly once we got all the permitting taken care of, where we were able to put a facility at our location in North County in Atascadero. A clinic is up there now, and it opened up in November of last year. And I don't have the numbers off the top of my head how many spay and neuter surgeries we've been able to crank through, but that facility is up and running, and it is accessible to the community. And I do want to mention all folks need to do is go to spayslowcounty.org, and they'll have all the information they need on financial aid assistance, our programs, what we have available. Now, I always try to reiterate the fact that we're providing the service for spay and neuter, but we are not a veterinary clinic. So it's vital that you have, you know, a relationship with a veterinarian as well. We're able to provide this high value service to the community at a reduced cost. But our goal, of course, is to reduce that overpopulation, hopefully impact kitten season, push back on that wave a little bit that we do see every year and that we're waiting to hit. But really, for us, it comes down to saving lives, and that's what we're in the business of.
Yeah. Are you able to? This may be getting into an area we don't want to talk about, but I've got to ask the question. Are there circumstances under which you receive animals from people who turn them in or that are turned over to you in some other fashion that you can't find homes for? Do they just become the resident greeter at the Humane Society? I mean, I don't know what happens with those animals.
Well, we do not have a time limit per se on how long we take to find the appropriate home for an animal. So that being said, we also do not keep animals indefinitely. We do not operate as a sanctuary. Okay. So we will not just keep an animal in our care indefinitely. We will find, our goal is to find that animal a home. So I think what you might be asking about is perhaps an animal is surrendered with a medical condition that maybe cannot be managed. Is that maybe what you were thinking?
That, and I think you may find people who, my hunch is there may be people who either can't afford the level of veterinary care that the animal might need. Their personal fear or inability to ever maybe choose to have an animal euthanized. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about euthanized abandoned animals. I mean, right. I had to euthanize a dog that was just too old and too sick to continue.
Right. Well, no, actually, thank you for that question. And that will actually kind of lead into something that I definitely wanted to make known to the community here. If we receive a request from a person who has an animal that obviously is suffering from a condition, we will counsel them that perhaps humane euthanasia is the best thing for that pet. Sometimes people reach out to us because they have a hard time making that decision on their own. And maybe they got advice regarding their pet and they just couldn't believe it. Or they want to find an option for their pet that they love so much, but they just can't come to terms with making that decision. And sometimes people just need to hear from someone that it's okay to make that choice for that pet that they love and care for, even though it's very hard to do. So for an animal that is suffering from an illness or disease that is not healthy, often humane euthanasia is the best choice for that animal. Now, we do, and one thing that I am pretty proud of since being here at Woods, is expanding what types of medical conditions or behavioral concerns for that matter too that we are able to treat and manage at the shelter. One disease that is really, speaking of puppies, very common in puppies that are under vaccinated or unvaccinated is parvovirus. It's something that puppies are always vaccinated for. It's a common vaccine in vaccines that puppies get. That's what we vaccinate for. It's our primary concern. But in some of the underserved areas, like we were talking about, Avenal, puppies are not vaccinated. They will become very ill with this parvovirus, and it can be deadly. Historically, we have not really treated that. However, we will treat for that disease at Woods. And a lot of shelters don't have the resources to do that, but we do and we will, and we have a really good success rate. So I think it's important for the community to know that not all sick animals are euthanized in shelters. If the shelters have the resources to treat disease, we will treat it. Because what this community here has told me through just being here for 2 years, seeing who comes in the doors to adopt animals, seeing what kinds of conditions people are willing to take on upon adoption, the 10-year-old pit bull with horrible arthritis that we've started on medication and we've seen improvement, and so we know that dog has a good quality of life, people will take on that dog with a medical concern. I've seen it, and it's inspiring to me, and I want to let the community know that, you know, we will take in animals that have medical conditions if we have the resources and we are able to treat them and give that dog or cat a shot, we will do it. And what the community has told me is that they are willing to adopt those animals.
I think I also
to leave it with that. So we're down to just a few minutes. So, Steve, you get your wrap-up time.
Oh, am I starting it now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I got plenty of time. Okay. Well, no, just to what the doc was saying real quick, of course, the adopters that are coming out and taking on those animals, but I'd like to also say if we didn't have a robust volunteer program, foster program of folks in the community that are helping us care for these animals, we wouldn't be able to do a lot of what we're able to do. So we're always looking for more volunteers out there at Woods. But if you are looking for more information about us, you know, I say check us out on social media, go to our website. But really, you know, we're a tactile organization, and pictures never do the animals any justice. It's hard to see scale in a picture. So I invite anybody, get over that fact of, you know, I hear so many times, I don't want to go to an animal shelter. It looks so sad, you know, or it just seems like it's going to be so sad and so bleak. I come out to Woods, and I guarantee these animals are being treated probably better than most animals are treated that have homes. It's like the Ritz sometimes out there. But, you know, the doc is in there like a little turn-down service every single morning. She puts a little dog biscuit on all the dog beds. It's really amazing to watch. But come out to the shelter and spend some time with the animals. Talk with the staff. If you're looking for an animal, do a little breed research. Keep an eye on our website because we are updating nearly, I would say, every day when we have more animals hitting that adoption floor. But please make sure you are spaying and neutering your pets too.
Yeah, good point. And real quick observation is I think that maybe people can volunteer for you even if they don't have an animal at home. That may be the best contact they can have with an animal that they feel like they can't take care of themselves at home is learn to be a volunteer with your organization.
It's actually a great way to learn how to have a pet, I would say. You know,
it's great to know. Well, this has been a great show. We've had a lot of fun with this. Please don't send me the nasty mail. I'm sorry if it got a little not emphasized enough on cats or too much on dogs. It's just what I personally understand, so I apologize for that. Next week, Chris Kington Barker will be back with you, and she has a more serious show. She's going to have Dan Dow, the county district attorney, Tim Murray, who is an advocate for victims and witnesses assistance, and Beth Robb, who is the Victim Witness Assistance Program Director of the County District Attorney's Office. They're going to talk about the issues of victimization and the number of people who in their life become victimized, and how the court system and the Victim Witness Assistance Program can better address that and make those people a little bit more comfortable as they work through that part of the trauma in their life. That's next week's show. I want to remind you that this is a program that we produce as part of a project between Action for Healthy Communities, an arm of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo, along with KCBX Public Radio, and we thank them for their support and production for this program. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org, and I thank you for joining us today. Thank you to Steve Krakenbrink, and Dr. Leslie Scalina for being with us today. This has been Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.